Welcome to Federalist 2.0. This is a new podcast where we explore the ways in which the Constitution, our instruction manual for how to run a government, could be improved. I'm your host, Jeff, and you can reach me at federalistreboot@gmail.com. Now, on with the show. On today's podcast, we're going to talk about the role of political parties and what they bring to the table, as well as what congressional leadership might look like with our expanded House. We're also going to finally address the impact that all this will have on the Electoral College. All that and more on today's episode of Federalist 2.0. So let's talk about political parties. What role do they serve? What value do they bring to the political system? It's very easy to say nothing, to suggest that they bring no value and are, in fact, a cancer eating at the soul of America, that they serve to segregate and divide in a way that it's anathema to the very core idea of what it means to be American. That the root of all evil is not money, but rather political parties. Now, as even the most casual listener will infer, I don't like political parties. I find myself loath to defend them, but, and I say this with some very real difficulty, they do serve some good purposes in the broad. They create visibility for new entrants into politics. Imagine a world in which new entrants into the political arena have to drag themselves up without any support from any existing power structure. The work would be incredibly difficult, probably too difficult for anyone without time and money to engage in. Now, we've partially addressed that by making our representatives only speak for 100,000 people. We've allowed some enterprising young campaigner to knock on doors in their neighborhood and individually touch a substantial portion of their electorate. But at 100,000, or heck, even at 30,000, it still represents a substantial amount of time. Parties can help to reduce this effort to broadcast a candidate's views to a broader audience. They also serve to coalesce like interests. I would suggest that the two-party system has done a very poor job of this personally. Imagine an impassioned parent who believes that children are the future. They're violently opposed to abortion, but also horrified by damage that they perceive is being done to the environment that their children will need to deal with and clean up. What party in today's landscape do they turn to? Their two biggest interests lie on opposite sides of a very bifurcated politics. Same with a pro-gun rights Black Lives Matter supporter, or a small government supporter of gay marriage, or a pro-weed legalization anti-immigrant proponent. All of these people exist. None of these people have political homes right now, because a two-party system can't properly serve the diversity of beliefs that Americans have. But in a world with robust third, fourth, and fifth political parties, this becomes a lot more achievable. Imagine a party for our hypothetical impassioned parent. Their platform is concerned with restricting or eliminating abortions, protecting the environment, pushing for educational reforms, even maybe politicking for suffrage of minors. But where are they on gay marriage, immigration? Their platform may be utterly silent on them, and that's fine. Not every party needs to have a position on every issue, and nor should they. Parties should be viewed as collections of like-minded people banding together to raise up the voices of their most capable supporters. Anything more than that, and they do become that tumor within the beating heart of America. So given all this, what changes can we make? Well, first of all, focusing political parties on the primary process and general elections and taking them away from re-electing incumbents would be a strong start. That's a large part of the motivation for allowing incumbent representatives to automatically have a place in the general. Second, we could go further. We could bar them from interacting with incumbents entirely. What if incumbents always ran unaffiliated? What if incumbents were legally barred from receiving money from their former parties? Wouldn't that encourage those incumbents to, you know, be their own man, to analyze politics and policies and proposals and make their best determination? And isn't that what a representative democracy is actually designed to do? Finally, and perhaps most controversially, we could suggest that political parties shouldn't align across the branches of government. We have a fundamentally trinary system of government, right? People that write rules, people that interpret rules, and people that execute rules. And there's no reason to think that we should align all those together within a single party structure. Wouldn't we be better served by having parties A, B, and C work with legislative candidates and having parties X, Y, and Z work with candidates for the executive? I think that's an idea really worth considering. Let's be clear, the disbursement of the House members throughout the country is a feature, not a bug. We want them responsive to local issues, and there's value in having the elected officials, at least from one branch of government, insulated from catastrophic attacks on the seat of power and ensuring continuity of leadership. But what then of congressional leadership with 10,000 or more representatives? Who will lead them? I think that's a valid concern, absolutely. While the power of the internet can be harnessed to expand and re-engineer much of the congressional apparatus, I think it would be foolish in the extreme to think that some level of leadership and in-person interaction wouldn't be necessary. So I would propose a mild change. The House members will elect, say, something like 100 members from within their ranks to be full-time representatives. The representatives will be paid more and have a larger staff and expected to reside at least part of their time within the seat of government. They would help to orchestrate votes and handle the administration of Congress, while also providing a valuable source of quick in-person negotiation over timely issues. This smaller body also serves another purpose. In the event of some kind of apocalyptic crisis that severs internet connectivity for large swaths of the country, this group could constitute a special quorum of the House that could respond to emergency requirements and ensure that critical government functions are performed. And to ensure that these individuals do not become some sort of permanent ruling class, I would suggest that a limit on their tenure would be necessary. Something like 5 terms in a leadership post, which would be 10 years, should be more than sufficient to ensure continuity of leadership. Given the smaller constituency and the more responsive election process, I don't think broad term limits are necessary. However, some sort of no confidence mechanism probably is important to serve as a check on partisan gridlock. What that no confidence mechanism looks like is a discussion probably for a later day. However, for now, I think it's enough just to acknowledge that it's something we'd like to address in the future. All right, then, so let's discuss the elephant in the room. Now, one consequence of the large expansion of the House would be a dramatic restructure of the Electoral College. One of the great compromises done at the time of the 1787 Constitution was that they found a way to give smaller states a say in politics. And they did that through what we now call the Connecticut Compromise, that gave states equal power in the Senate, but population-adjusted power in the House. And they then took those numbers, the House and Senate membership, and made them into the Electoral College. That's where we get our current Electoral College size right now. It's the 435 House members, the 100 senators, and then DC gets 3 votes because of the 23rd Amendment, 538. Well, because we failed to adjust up the size of the House as our population has increased, we've also allowed, for good or for ill, the states to become increasingly disproportioned when it comes to presidential elections. Right now, the largest state in the union, California, has 12% of the population, but only 10% of the Electoral College. Wyoming, on the other hand, has 0.17% of the population and 0.56% of the Electoral College. So Wyoming citizens, individually, per person, are about 4 times more important than they should be when compared to Californians when electing the president. Now, as you can guess from the title of this podcast, I think federalism is a good thing. I believe that states serve a vital role in our system of government. However, I don't think that needs to extend to the election of the leader or leaders of the nation. By adjusting the population of the House, we move closer to a system that resembles a popular vote for president. Now, along with other changes that we'll propose, I think this is a reasonable starting position, but I'll fully admit this is an area that I think discussion and input is welcome. I would caution that we should resist the urge to assume that all problems can be solved by popular vote. It wasn't that long ago that a majority of people in the United States thought Black children should have their own segregated schools. We have a republic because we recognize that popular vote is not necessarily the best way to handle all issues. And we should be wary of states wielding too much power. Just as parties have consolidated an unhealthy amount of political power, so too could states in the future. Imagine a state in which 30% of the population lived. They would only need to get 2/7 of the remaining population to side with them to pass legislation through the House. So to prevent that, I think that there ought to be a limit on the size of states. I would suggest, to minimize disruption, that that limit would start at 15% and decline by 1% per decade until it reaches 10%. That would give California and any other state that happens to rise above 10% time to arrive at a reasonable and proper solution for how to divide the state. But ultimately, no single state should represent a voting bloc larger than 10% of the House. Thanks again for listening to another episode of Federalist 2.0. My name is Jeff. You can reach me at federalistreboot@gmail.com. Please remember to like and subscribe. Apparently, giving 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts really helps, so if you're using that service, please do that. And until next time, thank you and goodbye.